Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. This is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, February 24th, 2020. Alex joins me as always. Alex, how are things going?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So before we get into, I think what we're going to do this week is we're going to talk about three ApplyWire candidates. But before we get into that, let's have a little bit of an update. Last week was another busy week, MIT sending out a batch of interview invitations, and there were kind of admissions results coming out of Cornell. But there's also kind of what seems to me to be a lot of uncertainty. I don't know if you want to speak to kind of what's the current vibe like on LiveWire these days.
Yeah, there is uncertainty with respect to some of the schools releasing decisions, Cornell being one of them in terms of, you know, people waiting, haven't heard anything, and so on and so forth. And there are some schools that I would argue that, you know, their process isn't clearly articulated, and that creates a high degree of uncertainty. And, you know, I'm not saying that Cornell necessarily falls foul of that, but maybe they do a little bit with their notification deadlines. But there are other schools that are, I think, a bigger sort of, you know, do this. And we also have candidates waiting for the likes of Yale and Haas, and I'm convinced that those schools are still going to be releasing interview invites. And Tepper possibly too, actually. So there is a high degree of uncertainty, and, you know, we follow it. We try to give some guidance in terms of our historical knowledge of how these schools operate to alleviate some concern. But yeah, I imagine over the next couple of weeks, Graham, we'll still see plenty of interview invites rolling out.
Yeah, I hope so. And there were some Stanford invites coming out last week. And I think the real issue is that I feel like most schools, they have a process, but, you know, there's a stark contrast sometimes between the schools that have these sort of very hard deadlines where they're sort of like, okay, you apply on this date, then 3 weeks from then, we issue all interview invites in one batch, you know, and then 3 weeks after that, we issue decisions in one batch, right? And then there are other schools where it's very much, you know, there's a great word in French for this, which is aléatoire, which means kind of like just goes along at its own pace, you know, like, so these schools, like, yeah, they just, you know, Stern's one that comes to mind, they just kind of trickle stuff out. And I think, and they say that at the beginning, it's not like they said they're going to release everything on one day and then they don't. It's just that I think in comparison, it creates a real contrast. So, and that can be challenging, but yeah, hopefully more interview invites are coming. And now I did want to ask you, there've been a couple of, I guess, what we could call admissions bloopers this year.
Yeah.
And they ranged from, you know, I remember back earlier this year, I guess it was MIT had a bit of a tech snafu resulting in them extending their deadline for application. But there have been a couple of recent ones. Do you want to speak to those at all?
Yeah, sure. And before I do, just to back to these deadlines, during my time at Wharton, which obviously several years ago now, I was a huge advocate of you know, sticking to deadlines, announcing when we're going to do stuff and doing it on those dates. And I'm really glad to see a number of schools taking that approach. And I think the standard for that now is Harvard and so forth. So yeah, no, I think that's definitely the way to go. In terms of, yeah, a couple of bloopers recently, and, you know, sort of smile a little bit about it, but, you know, in some circumstances it's actually not that particularly good. I think USC Marshall sent out an email and to a group of candidates and copied everybody on the email so you could see the email addresses of all the other candidates. That I guess is some kind of privacy
right.
concern. I'd be a little bit annoyed if I was revealed in that sense. And then Wharton, in its when it was releasing its interview invites, those that it wasn't inviting, it denies. I think it sent out a different deny letter. I think it denied them for a different program.
Yeah, so it was a JDMBA. So it was the joint JDMBA rejection letter that people got. And so I don't know, maybe this is some kind of new marketing strategy on the part of the law school to build awareness.
Yeah.
But no, the reality is that they just sent the wrong letter out. And so all these people are like, I got rejected from the law school, business school joint program, but I didn't apply to that program. So that was a little bit of a...
I could tell you a funny story about this, actually, which has some, I guess, some serious connotations. But when I was at Wharton, one of the things that we really enjoyed doing was calling up admitted candidates on the day that they were going to get that decision. And I know schools generally continue this activities, which is very good. And I called this student based in Peru, Lima, Peru, I think. And I called up and I says, "Oh, this is Alex Brown from the Wharton School." And the guy just sort of, you know, didn't respond. It was like complete vacant airtime. And I'm like, do you know why I'm calling? Because usually you see, you know, you call up, say, "This is Alex Brown from the Wharton School on the Day of Decisions. And do you know why I'm calling?" They're really excited. They know, they're in anticipation. And the guy says, "Well, you rejected me." I'm like, "What?" And he said, you know, he looked at the system and online there was a rejection letter and he'd already printed it out and he attached it to his fridge with a fridge magnet. Hmm. And I was like, "Oh, holy crap." excuse my language, but that's not very good. And what it turned out was it was a data entry error on our system side and the wrong letter had gone out.
So he should have been accepted.
He should have been accepted. Yes, no, for sure. Yeah, it wasn't a mistake on my part. I had a list of those that we've accepted intentionally. And obviously, in this case, we had to put in additional controls afterwards to make sure our data entry. And this was quite in the early days of these new systems. So we're talking.
Well, you were doing all that data entry by candlelight,
yeah,
right?
Something like that. Yeah. I never did follow up to see if the candidate actually attended Wharton, but it was definitely an awkward phone call.
Oh boy. Yeah.
And very rare you would see something like that happen again.
Yeah, so schools make mistakes. I just thought we should share some of these because they are, sometimes they're a little humorous, but also I know there's a serious side too. But I just wanted to share those couple of items. A few more housekeeping things before we dive in. Number one is that we've been releasing a lot of extra podcasts at Clear Admit. So you and I recorded one on deferred enrollment programs for the kind of college senior and you know, kind of young crowd that wants to get a deferred acceptance to business school. So that episode's out, worth a listen. There's also the Columbia Business School Q&A that I did with Michael Robinson. And there's another one forthcoming that should be out within the week or so, which is about how to make the most out of a MBA fair. Which I had a special guest helping me with that one, Jonathan Kayat, who's from Access MBA. So that's a good episode that's coming in the pipeline. We also, on the website, continue to roll out Real Humans. Some of the newer ones are a guy from Morgan Stanley, a woman who works at Deloitte in their healthcare practice. And I have to say, one of the things about this series that's been so fascinating to me is that we're getting to see these folks in some cases, you know, some of them are like a year out, but some of them are like 5 years out. So they've graduated from a top MBA program, and it's amazing to see like what some of these people are doing in their companies because they're in very, you know, they seem to quickly be rising into very senior positions, which you would expect, right, from a top MBA, but it's just great to see and to hear the stories. So keep tuning in because we have literally dozens more of these coming. So Alex, I'm sure you've been reading those as well as we've been getting them out there.
Yeah, no, I think it's the best sort of series of content that we've produced for quite some time.
Good. Yeah, agreed. One last thing. I don't know to what extent, you know, we've been getting a lot of posts in ApplyWire from people applying next year. And I just wanted to point out that the school, what we call our school landing pages on the website, are just filled with really great information. I mean, to the extent that Google is now indexing them as being kind of the answers to certain questions like, you know, what does it cost to go to the school or what's the percentage of women? What's the average test score? So obviously, if you're in the research phase, you know, just go to the menu on our site. You can find a school that you're interested in learning more about, and you can kind of get all the key information in one sort of one-stop shop. And it's not, you know, veiled in kind of marketing language that you would see on a school website. You know, we're just trying to give people the facts and figures and the basic info. One other thing, Alex, you are now at 162 likes. So people continue to like the feedback you're giving. I have moved up a bit. I'm at 48. Still, you know, really far behind, but working my way back into contention, hopefully. We will see.
I think I added about 10 of your likes,
no.
Graham,
you just
because I
bad.
Just like the fact that you're really helping out.
All right. One last thing as well. We're interested. Alex and I were talking the other day, and we realized that we've had about, I mean, it's got to be more than 70 candidates take part in wiretaps, you know, be kind of a featured candidate on the show. And I would just say, you know, if any of you folks are listening, it'd be great to go back in to your original ApplyWire entry and just let us know, like, what's going on? Like, how, you know, has anything happened? Have you applied to school? Have you kind of shifted your strategy? Have you gotten a new test score? Whatever it is, like, feel free to update us. We are able to see those updates because you can sort ApplyWire by recent comments. So we just love to hear from you and kind of keep in touch. And Alex and I have some ideas that we're kind of just sort of percolating on about how we want to kind of bring some of these former wiretappers back into the fold on the podcast or in other ways. So by all means, you know, update your posts if you can. And without further ado, Alex, I guess we should dive into it. I did want to mention that our sponsor is the Evening and Weekend Program at the Kellogg School of Management. Really love their support. We're really appreciative of all the support Kellogg's giving us. And I want our listeners to know that you can reach your highest career goals while earning an MBA part-time. The Evening and Weekend MBA Program at the Kellogg School of Management, which is conveniently located at their downtown Chicago campus, offers flexible study options to fit your lifestyle and match your experience. By graduation, you'll share the same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni. You can visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW to learn more. So, Alex, let's dive in. There are no decision wire entries today. You picked 3 apply wire entries. Any reason for that? We're not getting a lot of undecideds, or?
We got some really interesting apply wire entries this week, which was very good. The undecided on the decision wire, less so this week. And I just think that's a sort of seasonal, you know, we've moved away now from the round one decisions, and we're sort of partway through the round two cycle now. So there's less sort of undecided situation. So that was a thing. And I'll tell you, Graham, we've only got 18 minutes left. So let's kick on.
All right. So Wiretaps candidate number one. This is an ApplyWire candidate, and they are applying to Dartmouth, HBS, MIT Sloan, and Wharton. They want to start in fall 2021. And they've been working in healthcare consulting and are looking post-MBA to do consulting, but more general consulting, and target companies are BCG and McKinsey. GRE score, 323. GPA, 3.8. And this person currently has 3.5 years of work experience. They're located in Toronto, and it is a Canadian applicant. And they did mention that they love both the podcast and our guides. And I guess they are, you know, an interesting candidate in that not only do they work in healthcare, but they've had a lot of firsthand experience with the healthcare system because they have a disability, which has, you know, given them like extensive exposure to the healthcare system and fueled the passion that they have for this domain. So Alex, you had some back and forth, and actually so did I think, with this candidate, but what's your take on this candidacy and, you know, the target schools and everything?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting candidate, Graham. Not only have they got really sort of, it appears to be very strong experience in the healthcare domain, both in the sort of consulting side and then actually working in a hospital internally. But they also have a disability, which clearly seems to be the reason for this passion and interest in healthcare. They didn't disclose the disability, but nonetheless, that sort of, you know, you can really see why they're truly passionate and interested in, you know, not only healthcare now, but executing on healthcare in the future and going forward. Obviously, they've had to overcome a bunch of stuff personally, I guess, relative to their disability. So lots of interesting stuff here. As far as I can figure out. They're also interested in the MBA dual degree the MPP, I guess, with the Harvard Kennedy School. So I would say, you know, in summary, this is what I would think is likely to be a very strong candidate overall. The only thing that I suggested to the candidate is, you know, whether they want to retake the GRE. Now, their GRE score is 323. And actually, we're going to talk about another candidate in a minute who has exactly the same score and offered similar advice. That is actually quite a decent score, Graham. But my point is, if everything else in your application is outstanding, then the GRE becomes the weakest element of your profile. Is it worth trying to top that up, as it were, add a few extra points to you know, make sure everything's outstanding? Because obviously you've got a 3.8 GPA. They mentioned some other stuff they've done from on the academic side that sounds super interesting too. So anyway, overall, I think a really, really super strong candidate.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence about the GRE. I mean, like you said, you know, 323 is good. Obviously, I believe the average at like HBS is more in the 327, 328 range, right? So they're below that. If they felt like they could, you know, bang out another result that's 5 points higher, then I would say go for it, because it'll only help, right? The thing that struck me about this candidate, I agree. I mean, amazing experience overcoming whatever disability is that they have, exposure to the healthcare system, both at work and in, kind of for personal reasons. So they're really uniquely positioned, and they mentioned they're interested in the Wharton Healthcare Management Program. I think they'd be a tremendous addition, you know, to that program, given the experience they've had. I did wonder, you know, they talk about Harvard Kennedy for the MPP component. I was sort of like, most people looking at a joint MPP MBA are looking at several options for on both sides, right? So I just wondered, you know, why they hadn't looked at like Woodrow Wilson, or even, you know, Columbia has a program, and just thinking about like what would match best. Obviously, you know, if they go to like Harvard Business School, then doing the joint degree with the Kennedy School or something makes a lot of sense. But if they, you know, end up somewhere else, you know, then maybe it's not Harvard Kennedy that would be the best choice. So I just wanted to make sure they were doing all the research into that. And you actually and I were talking before we got on air about how, you know, it might be, you know, do they need it? It might be superfluous, right? Like, do they need both degrees? And I think I came down more on the side of like, well, if they're going to really work in government and with government, they might benefit from having the joint degree, because it would really allow them to, you know, kind of liaise with those individuals. And that sometimes there's a little bit of a, I don't know what the word is, some discrimination, I guess you could say, when a government person or a kind of public policy expert sees a business person coming, you know, they kind of run the other way or something. So there could be some benefits in having the dual degree, although I do recognize that it's, you know, it's an added cost and it's added time, so opportunity cost too. But overall, really interesting candidate.
Yeah, and I guess my point was simply, you know, these top programs on the MBA side have a lot of electives, of which I'm sure a number are applicable to the sort of public policy side in healthcare. And I think we had a quick look at, for example, the Wharton elective offerings on the healthcare side, and that did seem a little bit evident. But I understand the credentialing side, and, you know, the other side of it, you know, just having that degree is important in of itself. So anyway, overall, terrific candidate, I think. And yeah, you got to wish them the very best of luck. This is sort of candidate I think is going to make a real impact in the long run.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to just, before we move on, thank them for they left a review on the podcast they mentioned. So appreciate that. We're always open to reviews. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is applying to Columbia, HBS, NYU Stern, and Wharton, and they want to start in the fall of 2021. The career experience to date has been in operations, and they want to get into kind of consulting post-MBA, at least as a near-term kind of goal, with a Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. GRE 323, again, GPA 3.52. Years of work experience, they've had four. They're located in New York City, and they would love to stay there. And they mentioned that they are absolutely in love with the podcast and would love to be featured. So here you go. So the thing that struck me about this candidate is undergrad degree in mechanical engineering and German studies. 2 years in an operations leadership program with different, you know, different roles moving around the U.S. And right now they're working as a project manager in construction and kind of the architectural industry in New York, which is, they're focused on building modernization projects. And they literally are responsible for a $20 million portfolio and are managing 15 or more than 15 field mechanics. I should mention this is a woman. She's involved in the Society of Women Engineers, and has been since college. Marathon runner, volunteer at the local park. So, you know, the list goes on. What do you make of this person?
Absolutely fantastic.
I knew you were going to say it, yeah.
Yeah. When I was at Wharton AgCom, you know, not being biased or anything, hopefully, but I love doers, those that are actually doing stuff, rolling their sleeves up, getting stuff done. And, you know, this person, you know, nothing against consultants and iBankers that are providing great advice and, you know, intellectually doing some really sort of powerful things. But those that are actually on the ground building things tends to play well, I think, with AdCom at the leading schools. This person really checks those boxes as far as I can make out, Graham. So I would say overall, I don't think we have to spend a whole lot of time on this profile. She's fantastic. The same advice holds for this candidate that holds for the previous candidate. That 323 GRE is okay. But relative to everything else, it's going to be the weakest element of the application, I think. And, you know, with the fact that you have additional time before you got to apply, so, you know, if she applies first, second round next season, she's got several months to prepare. One thing that she could think about doing is increasing that GRE score 3 or 4 points or whatever to get it at par with other elements of the application. If she doesn't do that, I still think she's in with a great shot at the top school. So I'm not saying this is you have to do it, otherwise your chances are gone. But I do think if she does do it, it increases her chances and then sort of focus at those very top schools. So she does, I mean, she lists Columbia, Stern, because I think obviously from a New York standpoint, but then Harvard and Wharton in terms of her schools. So, but yeah, love this candidate.
Yeah, I think that's a great, I mean, it's a pretty incredible woman. I guess There are two things I want to point out. One is, in this case, the GPA is 3.5 and change, so it's not as high as the first candidate we discussed, which does, you know, put some additional pressure on the GRE, because if we're talking about Harvard or Wharton, they're both going to be below average, right? So there is that issue. Now, I do think that the amount of responsibility that she has and the experience and you know, even her involvement with, you know, kind of wanting to mentor women so that they have, you know, important leadership positions and her kind of interest in operations. I mean, these are all feathers in her cap that'll help. The first thing I thought of, though, also was like, go big. Like, this should be like Harvard, Wharton, maybe even Stanford, although I know she wants to be back in, you know, New York. So that's, I presume, why she's kind of leaving the West Coast off the list. But I also was thinking, if she really wants to be the COO of a kind of top tech company, that like, oh, you know, Stanford might be good in terms of the connections that it would lead to and you know, with a lot of the companies being in the Valley. I also felt like, I mean, this is maybe just personal bias here, but I felt like if she really is passionate about like operations and, you know, the heavy lifting stuff, that the curriculum at a place like Wharton might really appeal to her more so. And even at like maybe MIT, which isn't on her list, but more so than some of the other schools on her list. But that just, you know, could be a little bit of bias on my part, having been to Wharton. But just wanted to mention that before we move on. So, but yeah, great candidate. I also, the last thing, I love the fact that she's engineering and German studies, because it suggests a kind of really good kind of balance that schools look for in, you know, future leaders. So anything else on this one, or should we move on to the next?
No, I think your points are well taken. And yeah, why not at least look at that first essay from Stanford and see if it resonates. But yeah, I think certainly Sloan is a great addition to this person's target programs.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person's applying to, or thinking of applying to, Tuck, Duke, Harvard, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Booth, Wharton, and Yale, starting in 2021. Pre-MBA career has been in IT audit and then some tech consulting. Post-MBA career target is consulting and then working at a place like Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. The GPA is 3.84, and this person has 3 years of work experience. They are located in Chicago and would like to stay in Chicago, but they're mostly location agnostic, they say. So sort of, I guess they prefer Chicago, but would go other places. They're currently kind of looking at schools. So I think the list is long because they're still trying to figure out where they might want to apply. And they're leaning more towards, they say, schools that could send graduates to the Midwest, but they don't really have a preference except that they don't want to be in New York. So in any event, well, there was a lot of dialogue here with this candidate, and you know, they said they want to work at the intersection of tech, which is where they are now, and maybe real estate, and that they've done some real estate investing on the side. They also mentioned in a comment that they have a lot of knowledge and experience with blockchain. So what do you make of this? Because for me, there's some positives, but there's also kind of a lot going on, and that was confusing to me at times. So what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, we discussed this profile a little bit before we came on air. You know, if they get the 730 plus GMAT, which they're targeting, which is an outstanding score if you can do it. So good luck with that, with the combination of the good GPA and so forth. They're clearly a smart person. I think one of the things that they're going to need to do quite well at is just synthesizing everything into a nice cogent story so that their plan and everything really does make sense. Making sure that they not overuse of jargon and stuff in their applications. I think it's fantastic that they've been doing stuff in AI and blockchain. I'm still trying to get my head around all that stuff, and I teach a digital strategies course. So it's really, you know, clearly this stuff is super, super interesting. And so on and so forth. So if they're doing good stuff in that regard, I think schools will be interested in that, because all schools are trying to get their head around how some of these sort of very recent technologies are going to transform businesses. And there's no doubt in my mind they are. You've only got to look at what Google and Amazon and so on and so forth are doing with all their big data. It's just really fascinating. So as long as they get their head around all that, I mean, not their head around, but can synthesize their story so it truly makes sense. Because at the moment, it looks like they're doing some interesting stuff professionally, and then they're dabbling in real estate from an investment standpoint, and so forth. So, make sure the story is very cogent. You made a really good point, Graham, in terms of school selection, and they want to be well placed to be in the Midwest after their MBA. But your point was that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to target MBA programs in the Midwest, right, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, schools like Booth and Ross and Kellogg are sending a good number of people into the Midwest. And if you were to just base it on those stats, and you look at, like, you know, MIT or, you know, other schools, like, they're not sending as many people to the Midwest. But I don't think that's because it's like a coveted place to go and they can't get the spots. I think it's more that people at those schools they're not really targeting the Midwest. And so I remember, even in my days at Wharton, there are a lot of candidates who, you know, they all wanted to work in like San Francisco, Boston, or New York when they went into consulting. Those were like the big markets. And, you know, they would be like, oh, you know, McKinsey's asking me if I'm willing to go to the Cleveland office or something, you know, and it wasn't like a targeted thing. You know, people were not wanting to do that. And this candidate has the benefit of, like, they would want to go to the Midwest. And so, I guess the point I was trying to make to them is just that, yeah, they don't need to worry so much about that. I think that if they go to a top school, they can land in the Midwest if that's where they want to be. Whether it's Minneapolis or Chicago or, you know, Cleveland, it doesn't matter. They should be able to get there. The other thing that jumped out at me was just, yeah, like I said, you know, they have this kind of tech background, but they're interested in real estate. And they also have this thing where they mention they want to work abroad maybe, but they don't speak any other languages. And so this just seemed to be like sort of a lot going on. And I think, as you say, they could very easily distill this down into a very, you know, kind of coherent story of, you know, oh, I've been doing kind of IT auditing and tech consulting. I want to broaden and get into more strategy. So I'm going to go into, you know, ideally work with a McKinsey or whoever it is. And then after that, I want to get back into, I don't know what it is. Is it tech? Is it real estate tech? And I don't really know what that is. Like they mentioned, they're interested in that intersection, but I guess I'd need to know more about what that means. But yeah, they need to just develop a storyline, and ideally, the international angle, like if there is one, like I don't, I was struggling to sort of fit that in. I mean, maybe there's a, you know, obviously there's a global commercial real estate market, and maybe there's interesting things happening technology wise with that. I'm not sure. But it'd be good for them to just figure this out so that the storyline is clear. And to narrow their list of target schools. Obviously, they have a whole bunch now, to do so. But I think as they move on, like, it'd be good to have, you know, five or six on the list. And maybe they are, you know, Kellogg, Booth, Ross. And maybe because of this interest in real estate, they're throwing in a Wharton and a Cornell or something, you know, schools that are good with real estate. I know our colleague Elliot mentioned Berkeley and UT Austin as well, other schools that have kind of strong real estate stuff. So, you know, and Columbia is really good too, and Stern, but they're not interested in going to New York. So I recognize there's some constraints there. But yeah, but basically it's just get a storyline together. But otherwise, I feel like this person could be a really strong candidate.
Yeah, I mean, again, the 3.84 GPA, this is a smart candidate too. Good candidate, smart candidate, just needs to align the story, make it make sense. Like you say, what is this long-term goal, this intersection between real estate and tech? So right, yeah, just making sure that they're truly passionate about what they're planning to do in the long run. I think that makes perfect sense. In terms of the international component, all the top schools will provide plenty of opportunity to do something overseas during the MBA, whether it's a whole semester at another school or a career trek in a region of the world or whatever it might be. So I wouldn't really use that as a determining factor right now. I think that kind of stuff will be present in any of the schools that this person's targeting.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It's easy enough to go abroad for a semester. And I don't think, based on their background, that it would make sense to pursue an MBA itself overseas. So I think, yeah, just a semester.
No. And I don't think they're planning to do that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. Makes sense. I, you know, obviously really appreciate everyone's ApplyWire posts. It's so much fun to kind of see these profiles and answer questions on the site. And yeah, just to sort of see where people, you know, those that kind of correspond back with us, we're really excited to hear like what happens, right? So appreciate it. Thanks, Alex, for picking these out. And yeah, we'll be back in a week's time with another episode of Wiretaps. And yeah, hope everyone's hanging in there, whether you're doing research and trying to get ready for GMAT stuff or GRE because you're applying next year, or whether you're sitting on pins and needles waiting for news out of whatever school it might be in round two. We're going to come up to the decision weeks here really soon. So hang in there, everyone, and best of luck.
Yeah, best of luck, everybody.